Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
It's time.
Time for Silver and Black today.
To the ground game.
Touchdown, Las Vegas.
We're breaking down the latest Raider news
from on and off the field
and bringing you conversations with newsmakers and record breakers.
So hold on, Raider Nation.
It's time to
get it on.
Here's your host, Scott Goldbranson and Mo Moulton.
Welcome back, Raider Nation. It is time for Silver and Black today, the live post-game edition. The Raiders, of course, not a great one to watch. 31-13, the Kansas City Chiefs. This game really over by halftime, so we'll get into a little bit of the game. But the season is over. The Raiders now finish at 6-11. It's now a big season and off season of change, I should say. And joining me, as always, here on the post game show is my good friend, who as he logged in to take part in the show, I noticed changed his name to Sad Sack Murph. Murph, I have to say, you told me before we went on the air that you had a watch party at your place for a bunch of Raider fans, and always good time, and you never have a bad time when you're around Raider fans. But then the game started, my friend. What happened?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's when it all went downhill as soon as we kicked off. And yeah, we had Music City Raider Nation out for a watch party, and appreciate president of that booster club, Bam Raider, and all those folks of Music City Raider Nation. We had an absolute blast, and we still got a few folks hanging around in the fan cave as we're going live here on Silver and Black today. But Raider Nation's undefeated when it comes to a party, right? Like when it comes to a tailgating.
Thank
the
goodness.
Food's always great. The company's always great, and thank goodness, because the football was awful, and the vibes were pretty low. We're all kind of in our feelings right now.
I understand that. Some liquid therapy, I'm sure, was had by all. But this game, Murph, I want to get your reaction to it, because obviously last week, the way the Raiders played against the 49ers, taking them to overtime, was a good game. We talked about it on the post game last week. Jared Stidham in his first game did real well, so we were looking forward to seeing what he could do against the Chiefs, which the Chiefs defense, a good defense, but more middle-of-the-road defense, not as highly touted. As the 49ers defense, but boy, from the get-go, it just looked like, boy, the tape on Jared Stidham got out after that first game, and the Chiefs really played to that. They also were able to shut down Josh Jacobs pretty well in the pursuit of his title for rushing, the rushing title in the NFL this year. Hopefully he holds on to it. But you look at this game from the get-go, it didn't seem like everybody was in sync. I saw a lot of coaching issues I think we'll get into in just a few minutes. But overall, and I don't think it was purposeful, but it just seemed as though that some of the players, offensive line, like they were already on vacation.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned that our vibes were low. Well, it seemed like the Raiders' vibes were low, too. You know, one of the often things that we've talked about this season in terms of criticism has been body language and, you know, and whatnot. And it seemed to be like those things started to correct themselves, but certainly not. There it showed back up again in this game. And, you know, one of the things I think we talked about it going into the Niner game, that it was going to be curious to see, like, considering the decision that was made around, you know, our former quarterback, like, what was going to be the energy level? What was going to be the response from the team? And we came out of the gate and had a phenomenal game. I know we didn't win the game, Raider Nation. I get it. And that's the only thing that counts. But in terms of the optics of the game and the body language and whatnot, it was pretty positive. And so to not see that carry over then into this week was surprising. And then I don't know. I wonder if, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, but I wonder if the atmosphere had anything to do with it, because that atmosphere was certainly felt across the TV, let alone being there in the stadium and let alone being a player on the team. And it looks like you're in an away game. So I don't know. I think there's it's very interesting the way that this team has gone up and down. But you know what? This is something else we were kind of talking about, is that, like, this is what Raiders football has been for the majority of the last 20 years. And none of us can figure out why. We can change literally owners. We can change quarterbacks. We can change coaching staffs. We can change cities we play in. We can change anything, but the results are the same. It seems like once we start to get to some momentum, that things revert. It's not even one step forward and two steps back. It's like three or four steps back. And I just don't understand it. And none of us do, Scott. And I mean, we're not pros. We're not film buffs. We're not journalists. We're not, you know, former players. We're just fans. But someone, and I don't know if there's a science to it or not, but it's fascinating to me that this team can't get their crap together for consecutive things in a row, whatever those may be, consecutive plays or consecutive seasons or consecutive games. Well, we can't do anything in a row. We never do. It blows our mind.
Yeah. And listen, I think there's been a lot of, because of the success, and I say the success off the field, the Raiders moving to Las Vegas, although we'll talk about the fans in the stands tonight, because that is a big issue. That has slowly, actually, in some ways, grown to be a bigger issue than it was even last year, is the fact that you, and I always say this, and Mo and I said on the show this week too, Murph, which was like, you can't overcome bad organizations or bad ownership. So listen, with all due respect to the late, great Al Davis, Hall of Fame, we all know what he did. But towards the end, we all know he was struggling with his health. He wasn't exactly himself. Struggled towards the end of his tenure as owner of the Raiders. That's when kind of the decline started. And Mark Davis, for the most part, has not been able to find it either. And so there was all sorts of issues around that. There was all sorts of reasons. One of them being, well, we can't really compete because we can't create revenue. We don't have the stadium. We don't have this, which was the whole reason they were looking to get out of Oakland, when Oakland wouldn't build them something. So they get to Vegas and now they're rolling in the dough. I know some of you still believe that Mark Davis is poor and can't, you know, buy anything. It's not true. But anyway, they have seemingly everything they need to now be successful. And then we go through the Gruden grind of what happened there. And again, to your point, as fans, you all get excited. Everybody's back. The coach is back. New stadium. Then you get COVID. Then you get the emails and you get all this stuff and he's fired. So it's been one folly after the other. And so I understand the frustration with Raider Nation, because just as it seems as though you're turning the corner, you turn the corner and it's another brick wall, right? I mean, is that how it feels?
Oh, absolutely at how it feels. And you know, and I don't necessarily agree with all the open criticism that a lot of members of Raider Nation have for Mark Davis. I think that Mark Davis is a much different owner than Al. And as you just noted about towards the end of Al's tenure, when he was, you know, he's the de facto GM of the team and he's signing a lot of bad contracts. He's assigning a lot of dead money to the team. He's hampering their ability to really be competitive from a salary cap standpoint. And Reggie McKenzie spends the first 2 years of his career with the Raiders cleaning up all that stuff. So like, Al was different. Mark has assigned football people to do football things. Al was the football guy, and Al made a lot of the decisions directly. Mark Davis has approached, again, I mentioned Reggie McKenzie.
Right.
He's Dave Ziegler, Mike Mayock, like whatever. Like, there's been a numerous amount of people that he's brought in to do football things. Now, you can certainly question the people that he's brought in, but look at whose close advisors are. He's sitting in the booth with Charles Woodson tonight. He's got Marcel Reese there. I mean, like, he's got voices from people that are very knowledgeable and understanding on how championship franchises are molded, built, and operated. I don't believe this idea that Mark is a folly in this thing. I just don't understand why, for whatever reason, it just hasn't come together. Because I think that when you look at the blueprint, he's done the right things. Like, he's, you could, again, I say it, we saw it tonight. Charles Woodson is literally a voice in his ear, telling it, pointing things out on the Jumbotron, you know, and I don't know what those I would love to know what those conversations are. Love to know what Charles has to say, but like, could you trust anybody's input more than Charles freaking Woodson when it comes to the Raiders? Like, you know what I'm saying? So like, it's not like Mark is like just picking some dopey folks off the street to come in and pull, and run the organization. That's not what the case is. You look at the way when he hired Sandra Douglas Morgan, like, perfect person to come in here and run this football team. So to have it, I don't believe necessarily that it's a trickle down from a dysfunctional thing going on at the top. And I think that that Raider Nation, I think that that's a quick thing to point at. And I get it, common ground. I totally get it. But like, as you said, it's different. Al's tenure was way different than what Mark's tenure has been. But at the end of the day, the results are the same. So no matter what, and this is what we say on our show all the time, that when it comes to critics of the Raiders, until they start winning, they're right. Yeah. It doesn't matter what wild ass theory you come up with. Doesn't matter who you point your finger at. Doesn't matter anything, because the results are negative. So it validates everyone's opinion that's in criticism of the Raiders. And so, you know, you can't really argue against it. There's no until we start winning freaking football games, and then we can freaking push back.
No, it's true until it's not. Right. I mean, it's pretty simple. Yeah. But I think I you bring up a good point, because a lot of people over the last 2 weeks, especially since the situation with the quarterback, was, oh, this is so dysfunctional. And I understand the dysfunction. The dysfunction has come from hirings and firings, right? Especially on the football side. Although if you look at a lot of NFL teams, with the exception of maybe the handful of teams who remain consistent, that happens in all those franchises too. They just happen to have some more success. So to your point, I mean, I talked about it last week, where I said, Mark Davis said, he actually said, listen, I've grown. He said this last year. And when he brought on Ziegler and McDaniels, he said, look, I've grown. I've now learned a lot. I made a lot of mistakes, but now I know I need to trust the football people. Now, Raider Nation out there doesn't believe that the football people know what they're doing, because this year hasn't been successful. I think they're, while they're true for this year, I don't think that you can go off of this one season and say that Dave Ziegler and Josh McDaniels are complete busts. Now, Josh McDaniels, he's going to feel some hot seat next year, I think. Murph, when you think about it, because he's going to come out, if he starts 0-5, let me tell you, it could all be over.
Yeah.
Right.
No more excuses.
Yeah. No more excuses. And tonight was another example. I thought from a preparation, you saw Andy Reid. I understand how you all out there in Raider Nation feel about the Chiefs, but Andy Reid's a good coach. Andy Reid was basically just dangling him around his finger. You saw his players go out and do ring around the rosy in the huddle, which was incredibly disrespectful. And, you know, but the Raiders were powerless to do anything about it. Now, if you could punch somebody in the mouth, i.e. had a defense that could play at a high level, then you could have. But the reality was, the Chiefs knew. They just knew that this team wasn't going to be able to do it. And that's the thing that I was arguing with people tonight on Twitter about Derek Carr, because all these people want to see the Raiders fail because they feel Derek Carr was disrespected, which is weird to me that you want your team to fail over that. But number two, it misses the bigger point, right? Which is, yes, there's problems all over the place. Okay. So you're missing the problem. It's not one problem. It wasn't one quarterback's fault. It wasn't the defense's only fault, the significant part of it. The offense failed. The coaching failed. So you look at what happened with Las Vegas this year. And the fact is, Murph, and you and I have talked about it a million times for 18 weeks in a row now, as a matter of fact, that this team has had multiple levels of failure. We can identify pretty much what they need to do, and now they just got to go out and do it. And until they show us what they're going to do, you can't say they won't be able to, or they will be able to, until they start making these moves.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the first chip to fall was benching our last quarterback. And, you know, like you said perfectly there, Scott, it wasn't the problem. And I think that a lot of times we kind of want to get in one lane and we want to point to one thing. There are multiple things that are problems, okay, they're going on with this football team. But like it or not, quarterback is the most important position in the entire, you know, scope of team sports. And so when you have a quarterback that has had questionable success, whether you like it or not, whether you're a fan or not, the results are questionable. The numbers are there, sure, but the results are questionable. Well, as long as the results are questionable, then it's time to make a move. If anything was the theme coming out of this game that was a common point of discussion for all of us here in the fan cave was, and I hate to say this, and I hate that I'm going to say it on this show, Patrick Mahomes is on his way to becoming the greatest quarterback in football. He's probably the greatest passer that's ever existed. He's better than Dan Marino, better than Daryl LaMonica. He's better than freaking Aaron Rodgers. Like he's, you know what I mean? Like because of the way he's okay. So knowing that that's the case, that we have to play this guy twice in a row, who's never lost a division game on the road.
Never.
He is 16-0 Raider Nation and playing on the road. So if your quarterback has any kind of a question, nope, time to move on. It's time to do something else. So that was the first piece to fall. Are there other areas to address? Yes. Oh, yeah. Is Jared Stidham the answer? Probably not. Will he be in the mix for next year? Probably so. And I caught some heat tonight on Twitter to be like people taking runs at us about what we said about Stidham. I don't back up on any of that. Jared Stidham is going to be part of the conversation next year. Does that mean he's going to be competing for a starting job? I don't know. Right. Maybe in camp or something. But like nobody's got any delusions that he's going out and you know gonna set passing records. And when we talk about the legend of City, it's jokes. So lighten up, Francis. You know what I mean? Like it's easy with that stuff in Twitter. But
the stripes. Like, I love the stripes reference. Are you kidding me? That was great.
Oh, such a great movie. And you're the big toe around here, Scott.
I'm sorry, Holka.
But yeah, so I mean, like I think that that's the first of the big moves because look at what we have to compete with. And you're right. They punked us. That ring around the rosy crap. Like they called their shot. That was Babe Ruth pointing out into left field and freaking taking it for a ride and walking the bases. They knew exactly what they were doing. They knew how it was going to work, and they knew that they had the Raiders' number. And, like, there's – I mean, that was embarrassing.
It's incredible. I mean, it's national news. People who don't even follow the Raiders, just follow the NFL, are retweeting it and talking about it because it was so ridiculous. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the game, some of the stats, some of what happened, what didn't happen. We'll also talk about something I tweeted out earlier, too, about the number of Chiefs fans at Allegiant Stadium, a story that also broke earlier, too, about Mark Davis not being happy with opposing fans taking over Allegiant Stadium. So we'll come back and talk about that. You're with Murph and Scott here on Silver and Black today. This is the post-game edition of the show. If you're watching us on video, we'll be right back in a second. If you're listening to us on audio, we will be back right after this break. Don't go anywhere.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
All right, welcome back. Silver and Black today, the post-game edition. Raiders 31-13 losers in basically a blowout, of course, to the Kansas City Chiefs. Really the first blowout the Raiders have had all, well, you count the Saints game, right? That's the only other one. Yeah. Two games this year, otherwise single-digit losses for the Raiders most of the year. So this was one of those games where it was just really hard to watch, and it's unfortunate because you go into the offseason with that taste in your mouth. Again, do us a favor. If you don't already subscribe to the podcast, please do so. Wherever you get your audio podcast, you can find Silver and Black today. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the notifications bell. Also, do me a big favor and do yourself the biggest favor, because if you're a Raiders fan, you're a member of Raider Nation, and you want to watch something that's great, insightful, fun, you have to watch Raiders Fan Radio, of course, on YouTube as well. So make sure you go over to Raiders Fan Radio and subscribe to that channel and also download their podcast, because you can get the audio version of that too. It's Wednesday night at, I think, 7 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Four Pacific, seven Eastern.
Thank you. Got it. See, we're in different time zones, so it gets confusing at my age, Murph. But make sure you do all that. Also follow Murph at underscore Murph, M-U-R-F, and I am at LV Gully. All right, Murph, let's jump into this one, because I got a call from my son, who is in college in Las Vegas and works on the Strip. And he called me this afternoon before the game started, and I said, hey, has it been busy? Because CES is in town, Consumer Electronics Show. It's a big week in Las Vegas. And then you had the football game, you had a hockey game, the Golden Knights tonight. And I said, hey, how is it? I know a lot of Raider fans are coming. He's like, oh, Dad, it's all Kansas City fans. Like, all I'm seeing is red shirts, red shirts, red shirts. So I tweet it out, and then I get, of course, a barrage of just hateful tweets about, who cares, dude? Who cares? Jesus, who cares, right? So we get all that. But then we cut to the game. It's like, obviously you care because you responded to me. But we see the game. And then, of course, I'm talking to friends who have season tickets that are at the game. I'm talking to folks in the media who are at the game. And they're telling me 65, 70% Chiefs fans. And you did. When you saw the camera, it's like, wow. Just like last week, it's a lot of red. Now, I don't think it was as bad as the 49er game, but it was pretty loud. They even started their stupid tomahawk thing going in the stadium. Murph, listen, when a team loses, yes, you might have empty seats and all of that, but we're starting to see this actually accelerate. Last year, I thought there were a couple games where you kind of saw it, but overall, it wasn't too bad. This year, though, I think, especially towards the tail end of this year, it's gotten really bad. And I think the Raiders, they don't have that rabid Raider Nation crowd in there to make noise and to sway. You never know on a play. I'm telling you, fans do make a difference. And that home field advantage seems to have slipped away as the season went on.
Yeah, I think so. You know, we had the good fortune of going to the Charger game last year, the last game of the season. And there were very few Charger fans there, at least in proportion.
Well, there are no Chargers fans. Well,
amen.
I grew up one, but that's a long time ago.
Yeah, well played. Yeah, and since you left, there's only like three guys left. But you know, I think that the novelty is worn off for those people that have bought season tickets, and then you couple that with lack of wins, and then you know the common narrative, and I think is an accurate one, is that you know you've got a destination city, you've got cold weather home, you know, fans coming from Kansas. Ain't nobody wants to be in Kansas City right now, but people would love to be in Vegas. You know what I mean? Even though it's chilly in Vegas, I get that. But you know what I'm saying? So point being though, is that when you couple all those things together, and they had a lot to play for, then, you know, it's not surprising. Like, I get the math. Like, I get the formula of why this happens. Now, as Raider fans, do we love it? No. And when you see some of these people in the stands and ESPN cannot pull their cameras away from a god darn Chiefs fan in a 15 jersey, but like, you know, but when you see these people, to some of you folks to say like, you know, like, oh, this would never happen in Oakland. Yeah, but sometimes it kind of did. The difference was the boisterousness. That's the biggest thing for a guy that went to a lot of home games at the Oakland Coliseum. I literally grew up there. In fact, I went there before I was born. I was in utero for the 72 World Series with my mom. So I mean, I literally grew up in that place. And when, you know, but there was when you had opposing fans, there was a boisterousness that now exists in Vegas that didn't exist then. And I'm not an advocate of violence or negative, any kind of behavior, but I would just say that it was the response from Raider fan was different than what it is now in Las Vegas. So it was
raucous. I mean, it was rock and roll. People were excited. There's that. And 'cause we've all been to sports events, whether they're Raider games or not, other sporting events, where you can feel the energy. You just feel it, right? It's an it, and you feel it. Is that kind of what you mean?
That's 100%. Like, I'll never forget, I went to the 2016 game against the Broncos, Sunday Night Football. Mm-hmm. Khalil Mack goes nuts. Latavius Murray goes nuts. Like, it was an amazing game, and we absolutely trounced the Broncos. And you look over that Oakland Coliseum, and it's just a sea of black in the freaking stands and the beautiful Oakland sky and that bright green field. And there was just, there's an energy from the tailgate, but this was okay. I want to tell a toll story here, but Scott, but like, one of the things
go ahead.
Brilliant about Al Davis is that he crafted all of that. He wanted opposing teams' fans to be afraid to come to our games. He wanted the opposing players to be afraid when they were pulling into the Oakland Coliseum. He wanted it to be intimidating. He wanted it to be like you were walking into Mordor. And that's what it was like when we went into the Oakland Coliseum. And so that energy was present from the second you hit the parking lot to the kickoff, all the way through the game, to the time when you're walking across the bridge to go back over to Bart. Like, it was an absolute, I mean, just the energy, the vibes, all of that, even in losses, was amazing. And it's, and this is not me saying, well, Oakland's better and Vegas sucks. I'm not saying that at all, because they're different experiences. But what you get, though, with that different experience is you get a different energy to opposing teams' fans. And then, and with that, and I got to tell you, man, it is a little heartbreaking. And I, one of the things that we said here with the group of us was that Mark Davis can't be okay with that. Now, I don't know what the fix is. I'm not smart enough to be able to just, like, you know, spew the silver bullet that's going to fix it. But when you look at Mark in the stands, and how about at the national anthem, when they say, instead of the home of the brave, you get a bunch of people say the Chiefs. Look, if you're the owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, that can't sit well with you. So I'm sure there's going to be something that's going to happen, some sort of action that's going to be taken next year. And again, I don't know what it is, but that can't,
we can't have it. There's a couple things you can do, right? Because again, I know season ticket holders who have no guilt about selling their tickets to any Tom, Dick, or Harry. I don't care if they're a Chiefs fan. They don't care. And I get it. It's pure capitalism. I got it. It's their choice. But I will say this. You look across the street at the Golden Knights. Now, I know it's NHL, okay? I know it's a little bit of apples to oranges here, but there is some similarities, and I'll get to this real quickly, which is when the Golden Knights came in the league, the ownership of the Golden Knights knew that hockey in the desert, like, nobody thought it could work. It's like, it's not working down in Phoenix. They have problems down there. So what are we going to do? They knew that they had to go into this and invest in it enough that they had a competitive team that was going to win. Now, nobody knew that they would go to the Stanley Cup Finals in their first year of existence, but if they could just make the playoffs, you could get people in the community excited, and then everybody wants to go to the game, right? Especially with something new. And I think that's what's been missing with the Raiders. And oh, by the way, I think for local fans in Las Vegas, listen, COVID, that first year, nobody could go. So it kind of was a dud, right? I mean, that really hurt, because I remember talking to Mark Bedain when they decided that they weren't going to play in front of fans. And he told me, he said, this is his words, quote, he said, this is a punch in the gut to every single person that worked on this project from the very beginning, because we worked all these years to get this done and now people can't come. So you started that way. Then you have last year with all the turmoil. Now, I do think the thing with Oakland is you had legacy. You had so much history, not just the fans and the longevity, but you had history in that building, even though it had been reconstructed three times. But you had history on that field, including championships. So I think that mood, what people expected when they walked into the Oakland Coliseum. Now, I went to the Oakland Coliseum a couple times where I walked up and got an $18 ticket like an hour before kickoff, and it was pretty empty, right? Everybody goes through that. But here's one thing. When I was a kid, and some people still can't accept me because I was a Charger fan growing up. But I will tell you, when I was a Charger fan, what would Raiders do when they played in San Diego? They would take over the effing stadium, right?
Absolutely.
It was all. So the Chargers, and they got smart, and Raider fans hated it. But what they did was they said, hey, if you want to buy tickets to a Raider game, guess what? You got to buy three other games. If you only want to buy tickets to the Raiders versus Chargers, you got to buy three other games, because it was such a highlight game. So what they did, and this is something I think Mark Davis should consider, for example, AFC West rivals, maybe not the Broncos yet, unless Sean Payton goes there, then things could heat up. But if it's the Chiefs, okay, or it's the Chargers, anybody that you know, you got to make sure you protect your home field advantage against. You do something like that. You can say, okay, look, if you're a season ticket holder, you can't sell your tickets to that game unless you sell them this way or something. There was a system. I'll have to look back on how they did that piece of it.
Because I was going to ask with the secondary market, like, I can see where you could tie that. Like, you see hockey does that all the time, where you have pregame packages and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But with the NFL, without a single game ticket purchase, you can regulate that. But on the secondary market, right, that's what's caused all this, is StubHub.
It's all secondary.
And all that stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's okay. I mean, listen, there's been a couple games that I was at when I was in Las Vegas and living there with the Golden Knights where I went. I mean, the St. Louis Blues and I think the Chicago Blackhawks a couple times where it was like 30% of the crowd, the 18,500 was the opposing fans. So it happens from time to time, especially like you said, in a destination city like Las Vegas. But you have to, I think the Raiders need to think about that next level. How do they prevent it without, you don't want to hamstring your season ticket holders too much. And I know some of you guys are going to disagree out there on what I'm saying here, but that's what you do is you just say, hey, listen, you can't, if it's the Chiefs game every year. Yeah. You can't just sell your Chiefs tickets. Like if you sell your Chiefs tickets, they have to be through the marketplace. It has to be through somebody who lives in Las Vegas, Oakland, or LA. You figure something out. But I think you're right. I think they need to figure that out because it's gotten out of control. And I know a lot of the people in Oakland are bringing it up and saying it was a bad reason they moved to Las Vegas, but that's not the case. So, but it is an issue and I used to poo-poo it a little bit, but it's gotten worse. So I recognize it and understand that it does make an issue here for the Raiders. So we'll see what happens. All right, we're going to take one more break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the specifics, what we saw in the game with the players. You're on Silver and Black Today, an Odyssey original podcast. Also, a hearty hello to our listeners on 98.5 The Fan in Las Vegas on the radio. We appreciate you guys being with us. You're with Murph from Raiders Fan Radio and Scott Gulbranson. We'll be back right after this message.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Silver and Black Today, our post-game edition, also heard on Sunday on 98.5 The Fan in Las Vegas. We are an Odyssey original podcast. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate that. Put on the auto download so you don't miss a show. This is week 18, our final live post-game show. We'll have some things over. Murph, we got to get you. We're going to do a post-game roundtable at some point. So we need to do some kind of crossover. We'll get you and Jeff and Michelle on. We'll get everybody talking about everything and kind of knock it out with Evan and Mo and everybody else. It'll be a good time. So we'll get that to you, hopefully. Yeah, it'll be fun. But we're back here talking about the Raiders 31-13 loss. And, okay, let's start with the Stidham thing, right? Because that, of course, you know, for the first time in 10 years, the Raiders have a quarterback competition, and the only guy to audition for the job so far is Jarrett Stidham. Had a great game in his first game, second game not so great, although he did show some good things. Mm-hmm. But we still have people wanting to compare two games to 9.5 years, so can't win that argument. If you're in that argument, I was using the Disney Frozen GIF all night about Let It Go, because I kept getting I kept getting tweets about, well, what about the Let It Go, just Let It Go. But anyway, Jarrett Stidham, Murph, was 22-36, 219 yards, one touchdown, the one that Hunter Renfrow towards the end of the game, one interception, and of course the fumble he lost. It's a 76 rating there. He also, this was interesting, Jarrett Stidham was the leading rusher in the game. Yeah. 7 rushes, 50 yards, an average of 7.1. Josh Jacobs, who the Chiefs did a masterful job of game planning towards, carried the ball 17 times, 45 yards for an average of just 2.6 yards. And Zamir White got his usual one carry for 4 yards. Poor kid doesn't get a chance. But you look at Jarrett Stidham. Look, Jarrett Stidham to me goes into the offseason as someone, depending what the Raiders do, they go out and get a veteran, whether it's Tom Brady, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo, whether it's, you know, whoever. They'll go out, if they get that, and then Jarrett Stidham will compete for the job, or will be there as a backup, I think. I think they need to re-sign him. I think he knows that system. I think he's shown enough in two games that he's capable of being a backup. We don't know if he can be a starter yet. And that's where I think I'm losing people, because, yes, people were excited last week. How could you not be excited with his performance? No one was saying that he would be enshrined at Canton after one game, but we saw him come back down to earth a little bit tonight. His offensive line last week was pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. Today, the offensive line was terrible. He was under pressure constantly, got sacked a couple times. What did you see different about Jared Stidham? What did you see that you liked still, Murph, that he built on from last week? And what did you see that you didn't like?
I love his willingness to, so two things. I love his willingness to take off and run with the football, but he doesn't do it too quickly. Mm-hmm. He's not a run first guy, and I don't think you would call him a running quarterback per se, but when everything like breaks down all the way, then finally he's willing to just kind of like take off with it. We don't see him, you know, chucking the ball out of bounds. We see him still making a play. I don't love the idea that he's willing to take so much of a hit. And I think that for longevity purposes for him, I mean, you know, you don't want to see him taking those, but I love the idea that he's not afraid of that contact. And so that's something different than what we've seen. And so I do appreciate that. And clearly, it was evident tonight with that 50 yards that he ran for, and those weren't like designed runs. Like this isn't, yeah. You know, you have Jalen Hurts out here. You know what I mean? So that was good to see. And I appreciate his willingness to trust receivers. And we saw that again tonight, maybe to a fault tonight.
Yes.
Where he, you know, some of those 50-50 balls were maybe 60-40s or 70-30s, you know, but still he's putting them up there and he's trusting his receiver to make a play. This is not me taking a run at Davante Adams in order to build up Jared Stidham. No. But there's a couple of catches in there in the end zone that, you know, if he comes down with those, we got a different ball game and a different result. So, so I would say, if anything, to be critical of him, I think he might have been feeling himself a little bit. He might have been like, you know what I mean? Like might have been pushing it a little bit. He's not Brett Favre out here, the gunslinger. So, you know what I mean? Yeah, I think he got caught up in that a little bit. And, you know, and in terms of the narrative around it, me and Swag were talking about this before the game started, that it was going to take a 300-yard passing game with three touchdowns, 62% completions. Like, it was going to take that kind of a game for Jared Stidham for Raider Nation, for those that were detractors of his, to maybe start to, you know, come away from that argument. But as soon as we saw that first fumble – and the interception, but the fumble, and I believe we recovered the first one, then whatever it was, we were all looked at each other and went, here goes the section of Twitter going, see, you know what I mean? And so, you know, you kind of knew that was coming once those plays started to break down and he made some mistakes, you know, but again, I will say this, and this is not me trying to sell one player over another. I got to still, even in this embarrassing of a blowout as this ended up being, the optics were still different. The way that those plays were created to create those turnovers, they looked different than the ones that we would see in the past. And so, you know, is that a point to stand on in terms of being encouraged by going into next year? I don't know, but I don't know what it means, but I do know that it looked different. And I think that there's a part of us as fans that even though the results unfortunately are the same, at least it looked different. You know what I mean?
And Murph, I texted Mo and Evan during the game too. I said, you know, it's interesting. Even when this offense is failing, it just seems to be operating differently.
Yes.
Again, yes. Doesn't mean it was succeeding. Okay. So don't take me wrong here, but it just the flow of it seemed to go more. You could see it when they made a mistake or they were sacked. Okay, that's easy. You understand why that happens. But you saw how the offense was progressing, and it just seemed to fit. Again, not a knock on Derek Carr. Derek Carr is not a mobile quarterback. I would call Jared Stidham a more mobile quarterback. Not a running quarterback, just like you said, but a more mobile and agile quarterback. And so in that way, that's not Derek Carr's fault. If you don't fit the system per se, that's not all your fault. Not all of that's on you. So I think that. And so that's what I saw with him too. You know, Lewis Riddick said it several times. Look, he's making mistakes tonight. But what I like about him is that he is making, when he makes the mistakes, you can see how he's progressing through his reads. And sometimes he's choosing the wrong one, but you are seeing his eyes move and he's assessing the field. Sometimes he's just making the wrong choice. And so I get that. Again, there's no wins in a loss. You lose. But in a way, in some ways, I was looking at this as almost like a preseason game, right? Because you had a bunch of players out there, including Stidham, who you just want to see. And I said this to Mo on Thursday, Murph. I said, for the Raiders to win the game, and I thought they had a chance to win it. I really did. for the Raiders to win the game, he has to play perfectly, like he did against San Francisco, but a little better. And that's a tough ask for someone who's not started except for once. And so I think that's what happened. I mean, listen, they're a good team. I know you guys all hate the Chiefs, but they're the number one seed for a reason, although Cincinnati got screwed. We'll face that one because of the whole situation. But nonetheless, I think this team was going to have to play a perfect offensive game to overcome the deficiencies on defense.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it was going to take. And isn't that a shame? That that's where we're at with this Raider team, that like we literally have to have perfect games. And how often do you see an NFL? Heck, the Chiefs didn't have a perfect game tonight. You know, but how often do we see NFL teams have a perfect game? And it's very rare. And so if that's what the ask is, if that's what the expectation is, that's an awful tall order for a quarterback or a team or anybody else. And, you know, and we can, you know, for all of you, you know, those of you that, you know, really want to, a lot of times the feedback we hear is, all you guys ever talk about is the quarterback. All you guys ever talk about that. Well, yeah, because it's the most important position in all of team sports. Correct. So we do talk about it. And they're like, well, what about the defense? Yeah, the defense too. Like being, you know, talking about one thing does not absolve another thing. And so I really want to lean into that too, that like, it doesn't absolve Patrick Graham. It doesn't absolve the performance that we have. Poor freaking, what's our guy, Sidney Jones, whatever, Jones the fourth, whatever, our guy, struggled tonight. I mean, struggled. The guy was, he's been on the Raiders since November 7th. Dude's barely been around, and now he's thrust into a starting role against, oh my gosh, the greatest freaking offense of, you know, maybe history. Like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? So, like, that would have required that young man to play a perfect game. It would have required, you know, Daron Harmon and Trayvon Merrick and all these guys to play a perfect game against freaking literally all-world talent. Like, if that's the ask, guess what? We're going to come up on the short end of that a lot. And again, so then I go back and, you know, go full circle. That's what my whole point was about, that whether it's the quarterback change or anything else that's going on with this team, that's the bar. What we played tonight is the bar. We've got to attain that. And staying where we were wasn't going to get us to that bar. So we have to try different things. You may not agree with the plan. You may not like the course of action, but I applaud the idea that we're trying to do something different to grow, because the bar is so freaking high in our division. And oh yeah, Herbert and Captain freaking, you know, Let's Ride or whatever is in our division too. We got a long way to go, man. We got a long way to go.
Well, yeah. And I know a lot of people think Russell Wilson's washed. I don't. I think he's going to have a comeback year. I'm not saying he's going to be the same guy he was in Seattle, but I think he'll be much better. But you look at the division. You go back two off seasons ago, Murph, and you remember this when Mike Mayock said at the Combine, he said, listen, make no mistakes. We have to build a team to beat the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes.
They are the top team in the division. Now, what, 9 years in a row they've won the division title, 8 years in a row? Andy Reid's been there 10. So that is the bar. You're absolutely right. So when you look at the Chiefs, yes, their defense is good. So yes, the Raiders need a better defense. They need a lot better defense, and they need defensive players. But they also, the Raiders need a better offense. Okay? Now, Patrick Mahomes, 200 yards tonight, people don't think that much about it, but it was the way he runs the offense. He's now at a point in his career where he commands leadership in the huddle. It's a different type of thing. And so, do you have the personnel to beat the Chiefs at every position? Every, not just quarterback, but like you said, quarterback is the most important position on the field. So for this team to win in future years, that is the model. If you can't beat the Chiefs, you're not going to go very far. Okay, yeah, you get a wild card here and there, but you want to win a Super Bowl, which is what Raider Nation wants and deserves, then you got to beat them. And so to your point, I like your thinking on this, and I listened to your show on Wednesday, and we'll have to get into the dead cap thing another time, but which was great, by the way. People don't understand it. But that's where it's at, and I don't understand Raider Nation when they think, listen, I'm not saying Derek Carr or any quarterback couldn't be better on the Raiders if they had a better defense and a better offensive line, because they could be, no matter who it is. But is it you just want to be better and you want to be good enough, or is it that you want to win a championship? I want to see the Raiders win a championship for all of you. And if that's the case, you got to go bold, man. Fortune favors the bold.
Yes. Amen. No risk it, no biscuit, man. Scared money, don't make money. Like, let's go, you know? When I'll never forget when Max Crosby got the call from freaking John Gruden. The first thing out of Gruden's mouth was, we need someone to go get after Mahomes. Can you do that?
He did. He did. You're right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what we have to do. And until we get to that point where we have the, you know, the luxury of talent and the luxury of decision-making and the luxury of a track record and wins and all that, then we can get nitpicky about decisions. But until then, like, Scott, you know, Vegas is smart. And I don't, Vegas, and I mean Vegas, the entirety of Vegas is really smart. They set the win total for the Raiders, the over-under, at 6.5 games this year. And we sat here in these chairs and Raiders fan Rio and said, what an insult to the Raiders. We won 10 games. We were a playoff team. How dare you say that the Raiders are only going to win 6 or maybe 7 games next year? And look what happened. Like, so if that's what's going on, then we got to make the boldest of choices to make the biggest and most drastic of changes. Because look, man, 6 wins is just as good as 1 is just as good as 8 or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. The result is the same. Like, it doesn't matter until we start stacking up 10, 11, 12, 13 win seasons. Then we can get critical of, like, player personnel moves. But until then, ain't nobody safe. Like, except for the guys that are, as you mentioned, the dead cap that the Raiders can't move on from. Aside from that, like, everybody else is on the freaking hot seat.
Correct. And that's where we'll end the show tonight, too, because I think that's the biggest point, right, is this team. And listen, for all of you that are upset, you should be. OK, got no problem with that. They did show the sign on TV. It says we deserve better. Remember the Raider fan that was holding that sign, which I thought was great because they don't usually show that stuff on TV because the networks and the NFL are all in bed together and they usually don't want to criticize each other. But I was glad they showed it because that I think that's a good sentiment. Raider Nation deserves better. They want better. And can they get better pretty quickly? I think they can if Dave Ziegler makes the right moves. They have the money. They've now cleared the roster. Derek Carr will be gone. You're saving the money there. You're saving a lot of contracts. The list of contracts that are expiring is long. Okay. Some of those guys you want back, but a lot of them you don't. So there's going to be a ton of turnover. So this team, Murph, is going to look a lot different next year. And so I know it's hard because now Raider Nation's got to wait 8 months to see another game. But you got to see what this front office does. If this front office has a really bad offseason and the draft seems like it's crazy, then okay, then you should be concerned. But they have a lot of draft capital. They may end up getting more. And they're going to have an opportunity to improve things. I mean, to go from 6-11 and to win 3 more games, maybe even 4 or 5 even, doesn't take that much if you do the right things. And so the NFL has such parity that you can turn things around quickly. Yes, you can't build a top 10 defense in one offseason. That is true. But you can make it better to the point where you're competitive. I think that's what you're going to have to do. And it's hard because Raider Nation's been waiting for decades. But Murph, it's going to have to be a game of patience again.
Yeah, and that's hard, man, you know, because it feels like we've been patient for so long, you know. But I gotta trust what the new regime is gonna do. Again, you may not agree with the plan, but I at least can appreciate the idea that there is a plan. And I would just say this to you, Raider Nation: like, look, this season didn't go like we wanted it to go. Last season didn't turn out like we wanted it to turn out. There's a lot of things about the Raiders for 20 years that haven't gone the way that we wanted. Heck, the Super Bowl didn't even, I can say 20 years, but heck, since 1984 in January 22nd, when we beat the Washington team. But back, that's how long it's been since things have gone the way that we would have wanted it to. So that you just got to trust what it is, because what else are you going to do? Like, you can scream at the sky all night long. And guess what? Dave Ziegler and Josh McDaniels and Mark Davis aren't going to do anything different. So at least try to find something positive in the actions that they're taking and find something to root for. It will make your fan life a lot better than just sitting around and screaming at the sky all the time, you know? And I mean, again, I don't know if it's going to work or not, but I mean, we got to trust that it might.
Well, and what other choice do you have? I mean, and I said it a couple weeks ago, I know 99.9% of Raider Nation is Raider Nation for life. So they're not leaving. They're not going anywhere. So I get that. Or the other option is you leave, right? Which I know most of you aren't going to do. Although there's some people in the chat who say they're done, but I see that every year, by the way, as I'm sure sometimes that crosses everybody's head. Like, what the hell am I doing here? But nonetheless,
Not lying. Yeah. Hold on. No, I got to throw up a disclaimer on that. Not anybody in this room. And then,
good.
And you know what? Like, we, this stuff is tattooed on our bodies. We wear it on our bodies.
I love it.
We hang it up in our house. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we ain't going anywhere. And if you are thinking about going somewhere, then you never were here to begin with.
Look at that. I love it. There you go. See, Murph captured it again.
I'm feisty about this stuff.
I love that, though. That's why we call it Voice of the Fan. I mean, that's what it's all about. Murph, before we go, we always like to tell everybody, because now we're going in and Crab Fest is next December. Now we're into 2023. So we're in the next year. You guys, the One Nation Foundation, with all the revenue you get from Raiders Fan Radio, make sure that there's Swag Jeff. There's Michelle. Hey guys, hope you're doing well. I know they can't hear me, but I'm telling you, can tell them I'm saying,
hey, here's Lamont. This is
Lamont. Hey, Lamont. Yep. What's up, man? Okay, good. So the whole crew there, you can see if you're watching us on screen, is there. These guys do an amazing show, number one, but tell them about the show, what you do with the money from One Nation Foundation.
Appreciate that, Scott. Yeah, so we do Raiders Fan Radio. We go live every Wednesday on the YouTubes at youtube.com/Raiders Fan Radio. And 100% of the money that we make with our show, whether that be from advertising dollars to merchandise sales, direct donations, we give all that money away. We started a nonprofit a few years ago when we realized we can make money with this dopey little show that we do. And so that nonprofit is the One Nation Foundation, and we give strictly to Raiders-related charities. And I want to thank you, Scott. And the reason I wanted to bring everybody in here is that we wanted to thank you, because we had an absolute banner year with our fundraising this year.
And, yes, good and job, so guys.
That comes from the platform that you give us here on Silver and Black today. And we're just so appreciative of you and everybody that's given, and everybody that's, times can be tough out there for folks. And I know that, you know, but the generosity of Raider Nation is amazing. And I will say this, regardless of how you feel about the team, the fan base is unmatched. No one else in fandom
absolutely
does it like Raider Nation does. And our nonprofit and what we're able to do with it to help benefit others and to help lift up communities and people that can, like, we can't do it without Raider Nation. And we're so thankful. And so from the four of us to everybody out there, and to you, Scott, thank you for this year. Being part of this show this past year has been absolutely phenomenal. And our foundation doesn't grow the way it does without this platform. So thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you guys. I mean, listen, it's been great. You've been such a great part of this post game show. We've absolutely loved it. And any support that we can give, what you guys there do, especially for these Raiders related charities, is our pleasure. I mean, listen, we want to make sure that that's the thing I've learned since being and covering the Raiders and Raider Nation, is just amazing how the fans, because I've been around other fan bases, other sports, and there's great ones, don't get me wrong. And we saw it obviously with the DeMar Hamlin situation here in Cincinnati with the Bengals and what they did here in the city, and of course Buffalo and everybody. But at the same time, Raider Nation, I've never seen the depth of support. I mean, people will post something's going on in their life, they need some help, and they find the help. Raider Nation helps one another. It really is a family. And so just kudos to you guys and all of you for what you do. And thank you again, Murph, for being on the show here. And make sure you go follow Raiders Fan Radio and then check out the show. Anytime you give money there, it's going right to those charities. So thanks to all of you guys. And I can't wait to come down there and hang out. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, we're going to hang out. We're going to go to a Predators game, man.
Yeah, baby. That's right. Heck, we're going to have fun. Heck. That's right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We'll get it. All right, guys. Well, thank you, Murph. Take care of yourself. And bye, guys. Continue the great work, and I'll be watching Wednesday.
See you, Scott.
All right. There you go. That is Murph and the crew from Raiders Fan Radio. We certainly appreciate everything they do. Again, make sure you follow them. And Murph was such a great addition to this show on the post-game show. We really enjoyed it, and his contribution, just second to none, and we appreciate it as always. All right. Listen, do us a favor. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. We will be back on Tuesday. Mo and I will put a bow on this game. I know it's a tough one. It's kind of like Murph says, somebody pooped on your Pop-Tarts. I'm sure he's still listening, so he gets to hear that. But it was not very good. And we're going to make sure that we tie a bow on it and get rid of it and then start to think about the future. But make sure you check out the show on Tuesday and make sure you subscribe for everybody here, including our producer, David Stepanian, Mo Moten, Murph from Raiders Fan Radio, and the whole crew over there. I am Scott Gilbranson. This has been Silver and Black Today, an Odyssey original podcast. Take care, everybody.